Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following podcast contains explicit language and content that may not be suitable for all listeners. A surprise statement from Rex Huerman's wife.
She wants to keep it open line, give him the benefit of the doubt.
Gets everyone talking.
It fell on deaf ears, but she wanted to express her sympathy for the victims.
And a convicted killer.
The assistant district attorney who prosecuted the case actually said that some of the Gilgo murders could be the handiwork of this carpenter, John Bitroff.
Is now looking for a retrial.
Justice has been served, but is it really justice that has been served?
How could someone do that to someone?
And later, we look into the key clue in the Rex Huerman arrest that went missing for 11 long years.
During the time when these leads came in about the Chevy Avalanche, Burke is in charge of the district attorney's office. So it's very simple for him to say, you just come to me.
From ID and Joke Productions, this is Unraveled, Long Island Serial Killer. On the day our last episode went live, those of us who have been following the Long Island serial killer case and the Rex Huerman indictments closely were surprised to see a press release coming from Macedonio & Duncan, the firm representing Asa Ellerup, Rex Huerman's wife. There hadn't been a court appearance or a major news break. The timing seemed odd and unprovoked. Here's what it said. On behalf of our client, Asa Ellerup, she wishes to make the following statement. Miss Ellerup's heartfelt sympathies go out to the victims and their families. Quote, nobody deserves to die in that manner. I will listen to all of the evidence and withhold judgment until the end of trial. I have given Rex the benefit of the doubt, as we all deserve. End quote. Miss Ellerup visits Mr. Huerman weekly and still maintains that Rex is not capable of the crimes he's accused of. There are a few things in that statement that immediately started catching fire. First, the sheriff's office responded to the claim that Asa Ellerup sees her husband weekly. They noted they have 7 jailhouse visits logged, which obviously wouldn't be weekly since he's been in jail for 8 months. But perhaps she's planning on now going weekly moving forward. And the other statement that drew an immediate response was her, quote, heartfelt sympathies for the victims and their families, end quote. Not surprisingly, Gloria Allred, attorneys for some of the victims' families, released her own written statement. Here are the highlights. The victims' family members whom I represent appreciate the, quote, heartfelt sympathies, unquote. We wonder, however, what her response will be if Rex Huerman is convicted by a jury of the murders and/or other felonies with which he is charged. Is ASA willing to commit that if Defendant Uhrman is convicted, she will make a meaningful contribution to a fund to compensate the family members of the victims for their heartbreaking loss? We feel that sympathetic words without deeds are meaningless. We look forward to Ms. Ellerup's response. Of course, the most shocking part of ASA Ellerup's statement, again, a statement no one asked for, was the part that stated, quote, "Ms. Ellerup still maintains that Rex is not capable of the crimes he's accused of," end quote. I'm sure for the victims' families, it's confusing to both get the heartfelt sympathies and the statement that she feels her husband is incapable of committing such crimes. While it must be truly earth-shattering to the depths of your core to realize that your husband stands accused of four heinous murders, while your mind and body are most likely in a state of shock as they try to process not just the news, but relive the last 30 years that you've been with this man. And while you very much may not want to believe his guilt, why would you make a statement like this? And why at this time? Suffolk County District Attorney Ray Tierney spoke to Bridget Quinn on WCBS 880 AM about her statement. Here's just a snippet of that interview.
She's entitled to feel however she feels. The evidence will point in whatever direction it points. We're looking very forward to proving our case in court. We'll let the chips fall where they may.
It made me wonder if the chips might fall to her becoming a witness for the defense.
I would love to see her as a witness for the defense, but that's up to them.
Why would you love to?
I think ultimately it would be helpful to the prosecution case.
You don't want to specify how exactly?
No.
If the goal with ASA Ellerup's statement was to draw some fire, mission accomplished. Still perplexed as to the timing of this press release, I reached out directly to its author, ASA's attorney, Robert Macedonio. Here's what he said.
The timing was she has been to see Rex several times since the last court appearance when the superseding indictment was arraigned. And she had the opportunity to read through the DA's bail application. She wants to keep an open mind. She has not seen or heard any evidence in the courtroom, and we don't have access to any of the evidence that Mike Brown gets, and there's protective orders on that, so we can't actually see anything. So she says she wants to keep an open mind, give him the benefit of the doubt on all this, and make her judgment when she hears and sees everything in the courtroom.
What's interesting to note here is that the discovery evidence the district attorney has had to legally share with Rex Huerman's legal team is under protective order and thus cannot be shared with third parties, and that includes his wife, Asa. So while she may be visiting him weekly, it's not like he can share any of the evidence with her. The information she's received is the same as what we have, other than conversations she may have had directly with investigators and the DA himself. Here is more with Asa's attorney.
It fell on deaf ears, but she wanted to express her sympathy for the victims because, like she said, nobody deserves to die in that way. Gloria put out a statement that, you know, sympathy's great, but give us money. I mean, how is she going to give money to the victims when her soon-to-be ex-husband hasn't even been convicted of the crimes yet? I'm not getting into a piss and natural Gloria. We both have clients and clients' interests to protect, and that's what we're doing.
I also asked him about the part of the statement where she believes Rex not to be capable of committing these murders.
She actually believes that he's innocent, or she's keeping an open mind?
She's never said that. That everybody keeps saying that. She's giving him the benefit of the doubt and going to listen and hear all the evidence before she makes her judgment.
Do you think she will testify in a potential trial?
I don't anticipate that, to be honest. And unless the DA is going to call, I don't anticipate Rex calling her. I don't know what relevant information she has because the DA has said she wasn't here. The DA has repeatedly said, both in writing and in statements to the press, on each and every occasion of the alleged homicides, Asa was not in the jurisdiction. She is not a suspect and never will be a suspect in these crimes.
And while I had him on the phone, I also wanted to check in on Asa's health.
She's in remission. She's not suffering from anything right now, but you know, her health is what it is. She has the cancer and you never know when's coming back.
Happy to hear that she's currently done with treatment and in remission. But that brings me right back to these questions. Why this statement and why now? Perhaps she didn't feel her point of view was properly communicated at the last hearing, though a statement 2 months delayed feels late. Perhaps another news story is about to break, and she wanted to get ahead of it. Perhaps the documentary she's participating in needed another story beat. Perhaps the responses from D.A. Tierney, Gloria Allred, and other journalists and podcasters like myself was exactly the point. In that case, well played. There has been some legal maneuvering in the case of Rex Huerman since the last episode. The defense team wrote a demand letter for a bill of particulars. According to NewYorkCourts.gov, this is a list of written questions from one party to another, asking for details, that's the particulars part, about a claim or defense. The defense argues that the prosecutor's office has not provided enough information for Rex Huerman to be able to prepare a defense in response to the murder charges of the Gilgo 4 victims. They focus on what they call very vague allegations that Huerman, quote, caused the death, unquote, but lack specificity as to how and where he allegedly did so. It is true that the bail application and superseding indictment document do not specifically call out where and how Maureen Brainerd Barnes, Melissa Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, and Amberlynn Costello died. In the response from Suffolk County Assistant District Attorney Andrew Lee, there were a few new pieces of information, mainly that all four victims were found, quote, completely nude, unquote, other than their restraints, which included tape, burlap, or belts. They clarified that they believe Rex Huerman acted alone and only specified cause of death as, quote, homicidal violence, unquote. ADA Lee argued that the 12 terabytes of data delivered in discovery has everything the defense needs, and that they may want to check the grand jury minutes for specifics on time and place of each death. In other words, the district attorney's office knows what they will argue. They've already done so in front of the grand jury, and while they're not sharing with the public, the defense only needs to look at what's been provided to figure it out. ADA Lee said, quote, "The defendant is well situated to prepare a defense," unquote. Both parties are scheduled to conference with the judge on April 17th, and this will most likely be on the agenda. Next, we'll look at another recent bombshell, and later, we fill you in on our investigation into the long-lost clue that was the key to Rex Huerman's arrest. In the original bail document filed in July of 2023, we learned that amongst Rex Huerman's alleged serial killer web searches, like Serial Killers by State 2023, 8 Terrifying Active Serial Killers We Can't Find, and America's 5 Most Notorious Cold Cases, was a search for, quote, John Bitroff, unquote. John Bitroff currently sits in prison for the murders of Rita Tangredi and Colleen McNamee, two petite-statured women who engaged in sex work. They were found about 25 miles away from the Ocean Parkway victims. And John Bitroff has made the news these last few weeks because he's looking for a retrial. And he might get it. So, who is John Bitroff? And why was Rex Huerman allegedly interested in this man? John Bitroff was often mentioned as a suspect in the Long Island serial killer murders by internet sleuths, of course, before Rex Huerman's arrest, and he was convicted of 2 similar killings. Both women engaged in sex work, both were petite, and both had been murdered by either asphyxiation or strangulation. Their bodies were left in nature, in these cases, in the woods. They were found in November of 1993 and January of 1994. John Bitroff is also the main suspect in the murder of Sandra Costilla, who was murdered in November of 1993. Each of the 3 victims had been sexually assaulted, strangled, posed post-mortem, and were missing their left shoe. The Suffolk County Police collected DNA at the scenes of Rita and Colleen, but there was no DNA present at the Sandra Costilla crime scene. As with the Long Island serial killer investigation, it's been alleged that the Suffolk County Police Department botched this investigation. On the one hand, they reportedly looked at 152 suspects, gathering DNA and other evidence. On the other hand, 2 of the primary suspects were in fact officers at the Suffolk County Police Department, and the case went cold for 2 decades. But in 2014, Seemingly out of the blue, John Bitroff was arrested on second-degree murder charges for Rita Tangredi and Colleen McNamee.
A stunning arrest today. A man who has lived for 20 years in a quiet Suffolk County neighborhood with a wife and children is tonight charged with a cold case murder. Two women killed two decades ago. Investigators say there could be an additional victim.
The bodies of 20-year-old Colleen McNamee and 31-year-old Rita Tangredi, both considered sex workers at the time, were found within 3 months of each other.
Both victims were found in close proximity to where the defendant resided at the time.
Our cameras were there when the suburban father of two faced a judge inside Riverhead Criminal Court.
The 48-year-old said nothing and showed no emotion as charges against him were detailed in criminal court.
Bitroff entered a not guilty plea. His attorney says at trial it will be proved they arrested the wrong guy.
We tried to see if anyone was at his Manorville home for comment. No answer. Still so many questions from neighbors still in shock.
I thought he was an all-around, family man, Nothing ever strange out of the ordinary, For something to pop up like this 20 years later down the road, it's crazy.
Sound familiar? Seemed like almost verbatim to what reporters said upon Rex Huerman's arrest 9 years later. While the victims, upon the discovery of their bodies, were often dismissed as, quote, hookers or prostitutes, upon their arrests, both Rex Huerman and John Bitroff were referred to as husbands and fathers of two. Interestingly enough, they both made their professions in building homes, Rex as an architect, John as a carpenter, while in reality, they allegedly destroyed families. Neither had criminal records at the time of their arrest. Both were avid hunters, and both had a reported active social life. Rex Huerman belonged to many networking groups, while John Bitroff was referred to by neighbors as, quote, the mayor, unquote, of his neighborhood. In the Bitroff case, it turns out the DNA collected at the crime scenes of Rita Tangredi and Colleen McNamee finally hit a familial match on CODIS, the Combined DNA Index System. That person was Timothy Bitroff, whose DNA was collected and added to the system because of a parole violation. The police trailed both of Timothy's brothers, surreptitiously collected DNA samples, and matched the suspect DNA to John Bitroff. There were many issues with the trial, destroyed evidence being one of them. But in July of 2017, a jury convicted John Bitroff for the murders of Rita Tangredi and Colleen McNamee. Fast forward to 2024, and John Bitroff's legal team is now seeking a new trial. To help us make sense of all of it, I reached out to Mary Murphy, a respected journalist with Long Island's Pix 11, who has been covering the Bitroff case for years.
I've spent 40 years as a TV reporter in New York. In 2014, we find out that there was this Long Island carpenter arrested on two cold cases of sex workers to these unsolved murders from 1993 and 1994. I covered Bitroff's arrest and extensively covered the aftermath. After John Bitroff was sentenced to 50 years to life in 2017, the assistant district attorney who prosecuted the case stood outside the courtroom and actually said, sort of in a stunning development, that some of the Gilgo murders could be the handiwork of this carpenter, John Bitroff. So people kind of went into a frenzy.
He was floated as a suspect prior to Rex Huerman's arrest. And there's still some speculation now that he could be responsible for the two Manorville cases associated with the Lisk case.
I asked the current district attorney, Ray Tierney, if John Bitroff could have committed some of the Lisk crimes. And he said he's not Lisk. So I took that to mean that he's not connected to any of them. But it's possible that he meant that he's not Lisk in connection with the Gilgo 4.
While the 2017 statement made by the Bitroff prosecutor definitely added fuel to the speculation that John Bitroff could be responsible for some of the Ocean Parkway victims, it's not the only piece of information that did. Rita Tangredi, who was one of John Bitroff's victims, reportedly had an adult daughter who was best friends with Melissa Bartholomew, who was one of the Gilgo 4 victims. And John Bitroff lived in Manorville, which is where some of the remains belonging to Valerie Mack and Jessica Taylor were found in a wooded area. The rest of their remains were part of the discovery along Ocean Parkway in April of 2011. Here's more of my interview with Mary Murphy.
What is your understanding of the more recent developments in the Bickhoff case? He went to prison, 50 years to life, in 2017, but his team has continued to appeal the conviction. At one point, the appeals lawyer said that there was not a proper certification done by someone in Albany about the DNA evidence because genetic material tied to Bickhoff was found on both victims. And I don't think his family is necessarily disputing that maybe his DNA was on both victims after visiting them as sex workers, but they're disputing that he killed them. But now the latest that's going on with Bickhoff is the appeals team, that's actually part of the Legal Aid Society, they're claiming that during the trial, the prosecutors from Suffolk County did not provide an internal affairs report about a former Suffolk County cop. Apparently, this cop's ex-wife said that she believed that her husband at the time had killed Rita Tangredi, one of John Bickhoff's victims. So there is this debate going on now. These legal aid attorneys are saying the defense did not get this document relating to this cop and the investigation of whether the wife believed that her husband was the one who killed Rita Tangredi. However, the current Suffolk County District Attorney's Office is saying that document was given a long time ago during the case, during the trial. The original trial attorney, though, has said he didn't recall receiving that document. Did you become aware at any point that any Suffolk County police officers had been suspects back in the 90s during the original investigation?
I had heard, and I believe this actually was brought up at the trial, there was another Suffolk County police officer, a different police officer that I just referenced, who was a suspect.
We're 30 years later, and it's like the mishandling of this evidence in this case, it's jeopardizing the Bickhoff conviction.
He has family members that are very much supporting him. And at least several years ago, I know that his wife was supporting him. I spoke to his sister-in-law, and there were certain members of the family that were really working hard to prove that he was not the killer.
It is interesting that Bickhoff's family stood by him during the trial and even after the conviction, perhaps similarly to how things are playing out with the Huerman family. I asked Mary Murphy what John Bickhoff's chances are at a new trial in light of these new claims.
If it's proven that the internal affairs report was not handed over to the defense during the trial, you know, the argument could be made that it could have been exculpatory or helped him with the trial. I mean, anything is possible. It's interesting that the Legal Aid Society has taken this on. Usually an appeals attorney is hired by a family.
I'm not super familiar with the Legal Aid Society. Are they government funded?
I'm sure there's some government funding. They usually, you know, they represent people oftentimes who don't have any funds to pay for an attorney. So there is a chance that the family doesn't have any more money to put toward appeals like this. And maybe they felt that this was a good cause to take up.
I think it'll be so interesting if he ends up succeeding. And it's because of the same sort of negligence that we saw in the early days of the Lisk investigation.
It would be quite a development if that happened.
As a reporter on the true crime beat on Long Island, Mary has had a front row seat to how cases are handled by both the police and the district attorney's office. I asked her if she's seen any difference under District Attorney Ray Tierney's watch.
I think there's more transparency now. And in fact, I was really amazed at the amount of detail contained in that bail affidavit when Rex Huerman was presented in court. I received 32 pages of essentially evidence in the Gilgo case. Then there was another affidavit that was presented in January when he was indicted on the fourth Gilgo victim, Maureen Brainerd Barnes. So I think there's been a sea change out there. Once we saw all the things about the searches and the phones and the burners, the DNA, you know, then in terms of the Gilgo 4, it seemed like there was strong evidence pointing to Rex Huerman. But the questions about the dismembered victims that were found along Ocean Parkway, that's still not answered. So it's going to be really interesting to see if they tie any of those dismembered cases to Rex Ewerman.
When it comes to John Bitroff or any convicted person, the appeals process is part of our judicial system for good reason. Wrongful convictions, unfortunately, do happen. But when a convicted killer, especially one that took years to bring to trial, seems to gain traction on an appeal, the family of the victims get these old wounds opened all over again. Teresa Tangredi, niece of Rita Tangredi, a John Bitroff victim, is processing all of this new information now. Here's a little bit of my interview with her from before the appeals news broke.
What are your sort of early memories of your aunt?
She loved to dance. I just remember her dancing a lot, and she had three kids at the time. My Aunt Rita's oldest son is Anthony. She had a daughter, Amanda, but she had passed away. And then there's Frankie. I just remember playing with her kids a lot. We'd always play hide and seek. We always would play red light, green light. My Aunt Rita was a very, very good mom. Always took care of her kids. She always had her kids with the best of whatever she could get and whatever her husband at the time could afford. I loved her husband. His name was Frankie. I just remember him being this shabby guy, and he would always smile.
Did they remain together or did they split up?
They were together, but then my aunt just chose to go down the wrong path. Everybody makes mistakes. She was still married to him when she passed away. It was just wrong choices. Drugs had taken over. She might have been this little short little Puerto Rican girl, but she'd open up a can of whoop-ass if she needed to. She was feisty, but very loving.
Teresa also spoke about how the news of John Bitroff's arrest impacted the family.
I thought they're going to catch this person, whoever did it, man or woman. No, Grandpa, they're going to catch him. She's like, well, they should have catched him already, you know, after a couple of days. Years went by, and I was always thinking in the back of my mind, you know, when? And then I gave up hope after about 10 years. We thought it was a cold case. And my cousin Anthony called. They found my mom's killer. I got goosebumps now saying it again. I screamed so loud. I was so happy. I started crying. Even the tears now, I can remember that day. It shattered everybody's world. When my mom found out, she just went ballistic because that was her baby sister. They were very, very close. I wish my grandmother would have been here to find out the justice of her daughter, you know? Them catching John Bitroff. Justice has been served. But is it really justice that has been served? I mean, this man is still alive. You know, in jail. It's really, really sad that he still has this life and he's living in jail, but these two women are gone.
Well, and he got 20 years of freedom after he did it.
Yeah, exactly.
And now, almost 7 years later, an alleged prosecutorial mishandling could derail the conviction. I reconnected with Teresa and asked how she was feeling in light of John Bitroff's appeal.
His evidence and DNA don't lie. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. I firmly stand on my belief that he was a suspect. My family, we don't believe in eye for an eye. We have that much faith that, you know, only God can judge you. We prayed for John Bitroff and his family. How could someone do that to someone? You do the crime, you got to do the time.
I asked if Teresa had heard anything about Rita's oldest daughter, Amanda, allegedly knowing Gilgo 4 victim Melissa Bartholomew.
I have no idea about that. God bless her soul, Amanda. She passed away. What's really sad is her brother, Anthony, he got a call on his 40th birthday that they found her in an abandoned house and she overdosed.
I'm so sorry, Teresa.
I'm just so glad I got to know her when we buried my grandma, Rita's mom, because the last time I saw her, I think she was like 4 years old. And here she is, like, grown woman. And she was introducing me to other family, her family members, as, you know, this is my blood. She looked so much like my Aunt Rita. I couldn't stop saying it. They choose a path, good or bad. I want to say, I just wish I could have my aunt back because she was a beautiful soul. As we get older, you know, we lose loved ones and family members. They shouldn't be taken from us. What's the enjoyment? You know, what goes on in someone's mind? I just wish that, you know, everybody could be at peace, but, you know, that's never going to happen. If his family ever hears this, yes, we pray every now and again for his soul. And it's not right what he did. We really miss my Aunt Rita. We do all the time.
It's important that we never forget the victims and their families in all of this. Every headline brings the emotions back to the forefront. We will bring you updates on whether or not John Bitrolf is successful in his bid for a new trial. Next, we look into what went wrong at the Suffolk County Police Department when it came to that key piece of evidence that led to the identification of Rex Huerman, the dark green Chevy Avalanche.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Janice from Warner Brothers Discovery. Spring is officially in bloom here in the Northern Hemisphere, and with a fresh season underway, you might be seeking your own transformation. For some, that means a new approach to weight loss or nutrition. Noom has a unique approach. Noom is tailored to each person's psychology and biology. It's built to meet you where you are because Noom understands that no two people are the same. Noom stands out to me because it offers a holistic approach to well-being. From coaching to recipes, Noom's app provides personalized information to help you on your journey. I also think it's great that Noom doesn't restrict what you can eat, and it doesn't shame you for treating yourself. And treat yourself you should. What's more, Noom believes in nourishing rather than restricting. Noom can help you lose weight while still enjoying your favorite foods because this approach is about eating well and treating your body right. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your free trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold. Hey, it's Janice from Warner Brothers Discovery. I'm very lucky to have a close relationship with my amazing mom, and I'm doubly lucky to be friends with some amazing moms. The thing is, this means that every year, right around this time, I get those panicked phone calls asking for Mother's Day gift recommendations from, obviously, their partners. So I was excited to learn about StoryWorth just in time for Mother's Day 2024. StoryWorth is an interactive way to preserve your loved one's stories for years to come. Here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question like, what do people get wrong about you? Or what's the most incredible trip you've ever been on? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. StoryWorth will send you a copy of your loved one's response, and after a year, StoryWorth compiles the stories and some photographs into a beautiful hardcover book that will last for generations. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. The moms in my life are big-hearted, hilarious, and they're all super storytellers. So they're going to love StoryWorth. I just know it. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/unraveled. That's StoryWorth.com/unraveled to save $10 on your first purchase.
One of the most disturbing revelations that came to light through the bail document that District Attorney Ray Tierney filed is the fact that the new investigative team narrowed their search to Rex Huerman based on clear witness testimony that was available to the Suffolk County Police Department prior to January of 2011. That means for 12 years, the clue we've all been waiting for was sitting right there in the files, and no one had bothered to investigate it. Nothing about this has infuriated me more. So we've been looking for answers. For those of you who don't know what investigative lead I'm talking about, or for those who need a refresher, let me catch you up. On September 1st of 2010, Amberlynn Costello, one of the Gilgo 4 victims found along Ocean Parkway, was contacted by a burner phone. This burner cell phone, at some point, pinged a cell tower in Massapequa Park while the communications were taking place. As we now know, Massapequa Park is the home of Rex Huerman, the suspect who's been arrested for Amber's murder. The burner phone then traveled to West Babylon, close to the home of Amberlynn Costello, before making contact again at 12.05 a.m. Since that's after midnight, it's technically September 2nd of 2010. Dave Schaller, a friend and sometimes roommate of Amber, has stated that he came home that night to find a man he didn't know threatening Amber. Amber, who occasionally engaged in sex work, had allegedly locked herself in the bathroom. Schaller claims he came to blows with this stranger, and eventually he left in a truck. This is important. Dave Schaller saw the man clearly, as well as his vehicle. At about 1:18 a.m., Amber's phone received a text message from the burner phone stating, quote, "That was not nice. Do I credit next time?" End quote. It's assumed the word "get" was missing from the text. Do I get credit next time? Within 2 minutes of this text message being sent, the burner phone was back in Massapequa Park. On the evening of September 2nd, around 9:30 p.m., so about 20 or 21 hours later, the same burner phone contacted Amber from Midtown Manhattan. We now know that is where Rex Huerman's office was located. The burner phone then traveled to Massapequa Park and back to West Babylon when it had contact with Amber's phone again around 11:17 p.m. After this, Amber was seen leaving her residence. A witness saw her getting into a dark-colored truck. It was assumed with a client. And that was the last time Amberlynn Costello was ever seen alive. She left her cell phone at home, so she didn't have contact with anyone after that. It's believed that the client convinced Amber to meet up a second time the following night, and for lack of a better description, make good on the business deal that had been arranged the previous evening. The Suffolk County District Attorney alleges the client in question is Rex Huerman. 3 months later, on December 13th of 2010, Amberlynn Costello's body was found along Ocean Parkway together with Melissa Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, and Maureen Brainerd Barnes. Together, they became known as the Gilgo Four. After the discovery of Amber's body, Dave Schaller insists he went to the Suffolk County Police. We don't have an exact date, but since Amber wasn't identified until early January of 2011, it's probable he went to the police after that. He gave police the description of the man he suspected, the last client of Amber's. He said that he saw a man that, quote, looked like an ogre, end quote. But he also told police the man drove a dark green Chevy Avalanche truck. Now fast forward 11 years, when under the direction of District Attorney Ray Tierney, the Long Island Serial Killer Task Force goes through all of the evidence in the files again.
And a female state trooper takes it upon herself to search the registered vehicle databases and not only finds the dark green Chevy Avalanche truck in Massapequa Park, but also that its registered owner, Rex Huerman, fits the physical description of the witness testimony. So why did the Suffolk County Police Department not pursue this lead back in 2011? I reached out to then-Suffolk County Chief of Detectives, Dominic Verone. And if you've listened to this podcast from the beginning, you've heard from Dominic before. And while we've met in the past, he said he couldn't sit for an interview at this time, although he gave me permission to read you the text that he sent me. Here's what he said. Quote, I don't recall anything about a Chevy Avalanche or where it was buried in the case folders. A chief is never aware of all the nuts and bolts in hundreds of leads in a massive investigation. I wish I was. Eventually, I would have been able to review the files, but the way I was pushed out with such short notice precluded that. I am anxious to learn who was the witness, who took a statement from him, when it was taken, and how it was recorded. This will all come out in discovery, end quote. It is important to remember that Amber and the other women were found not because police were looking for them, but because they were looking for Shannon Gilbert. Shannon was a sex worker who went missing in the nearby exclusive gated community of Oak Beach in May of 2010. Upon discovery of the Gilgo 4, the search did not stop. In fact, it intensified. And in April of 2011, several more bodies were discovered, including that of Valerie Mack, Jessica Taylor, Karen Vergata, and the yet-to-be-identified bodies of Peaches and her toddler, as well as the victim known as either Asian Male Doe or Gilgo Beach Doe. Shannon Gilbert wasn't found until December of 2011, a year after the Gilgo 4. Is it possible that the massive search and accompanying press coverage overwhelmed the department with leads? Maybe. But in speaking with several sources, a different explanation has been offered. Here's my interview with Suffolk County legislator Robert Trotta.
The tip about the Avalanche comes in early January. So in 2011, the old guard, before Burke came in, would have been in charge of the investigation, people like Verone.
Yes.
What is the theory about how that tip would have not made it to the police officers in charge of the investigation at that time, as far as Burke is concerned?
Well, during the time when these leads came in about the Chevy Avalanche, now, this is more than conjecture. This is people who have worked there, you know, talking about it. What happens is the district attorney and the homicide squad work very closely together. At the time, Burke is in charge of the district attorney's office. So it's very simple for him to say to the detectives, look, you tell me everything. You don't tell them anything because they're going to be gone in 6 months or a year, and I'm going to be the chief. So there's no sense of them telling them anything. You just come to me. They're paranoid that the FBI is looking at Burke.
And then it's in 2012 when Burke officially takes over as chief. What is the first thing Burke does when he gets in charge?
He just disbanded every single federal task force. We had five or six guys in the DEA. You come back. We don't work with the DEA. There was two detectives assigned to the ATF. They were pulled out. So this was, you know, it was in the plan.
And as far as if Burke did have anything to do, hypothetically, you know, like that theory exists because he wields a certain level of influence. He was at the DA's office, but like, were people familiar with other aspects of Burke's history and who he was close to and the powerful connections he had?
Everyone knew he was protected by Spoda and that he was a deviant criminal, that he was out of his mind, that if he ever became the chief, you know, people who knew him and knew of him, he was power hungry. And he would just step all over you. He could care less about you.
And are you just surprised in general that 12 years later, this tip that they had the whole time, you know, was miraculously found by just a female police officer doing work?
Right off the top of my head, it sounds like they screwed up. You know, but of course, I wasn't there during that time. I mean, there could have been 50 boxes of materials. But it doesn't matter. When you look at the fact pattern, any supervisor, anybody with half a brain would figure out, okay, this is our big lead. This woman was missing 2 months ago. We got a guy saying that he got in a car with a guy in a Chevy Avalanche and he's 6'6". That's got to be the number one thing you're looking at.
Whether this exact lead was buried at James Burke's request, we'll never know.
But the fact that Spoda and Burke were having backdoor influence on rank and file at the police department, ahead of his appointment there, is troubling in light of what happened. One other side note, Steve Ballone, the man who appointed James Burke, termed out of office last year. 2 weeks ago, it was revealed that current District Attorney Ray Tierney is leading an investigation into Ballone, probing whether he or his officials improperly destroyed county records. The saga of corruption in Suffolk County seems to be never-ending. If you want to hear Ballone try to explain why he didn't remove Burke in the face of overwhelming evidence of wrongdoing, check out episode 6 of this podcast. It's mind-blowing. And if you would like to contribute to our story, or if you know Rex Huerman, please send an email to us at unraveledtips@gmail.com. Or you can contact me directly on Instagram at Alexis Linkletter.
Unraveled is produced by Joke Productions 4ID. The executive producers and writers of this podcast are Joke Finciun, Biagio Messina, and myself, Alexis Linkletter.
Executive producer for ID is Annie Mangoni.
Our editor is Caitlin Cleveland. Lisa Rybakov is our associate producer. The music and score that you've heard in this podcast is by Biagio Messina. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps a lot when you subscribe, rate, and review the podcasts that you enjoy listening to. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from L.A. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.